advisement, and the court will proceed to the sixth case, Walsh versus the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. Mr. Stotter.
Good morning. May it please the court. Daniel Stotter for Plaintiff Appellant Dennis Walsh. In the present Freedom of Information Act case, it wasn't until after appellant filed this action that Mr. Walsh was finally able to finally receive his personal VA medical records for his 1977 treatment at the VA Heinz Blind Rehabilitation Center. And it's undisputed that prior to filing this action, the VA had claimed that there were no medical records from appellant's 1977 blindness treatment. The district court final order and judgment entered a judgment for defendant as the prevailing party in this action, notwithstanding undisputed facts showing multiple violations of FOIA, both in failing to provide the Heinz blind rehabilitation records, but also defendant's failure to timely respond to the request and its failure to ever respond or timely respond to plaintiff's FOIA administrative appeal. For judgment to go to the defendant under these circumstances effectively negates the Freedom of Information Act citizen suit because defendant can simply fail to provide records until a party is ready and willing and able to file a citizen suit and then can have belated compliance by providing the records and be declared the prevailing party. Appellant's position is that the two well-recognized exceptions to mootness, both voluntary cessation and the capable of repetition, yet evading review doctrine, apply. But surprisingly, there is an absence of cases in this circuit or in any circuit that discuss the relationship of those doctrines to FOIA. The only case that I am aware of is from the 11th Circuit. It's the Shilovis case, and that case merges the two doctrines improperly. It confuses the doctrines. It's not a very well-reasoned case from the 11th Circuit. Our position is that both of these doctrines apply. The voluntary cessation doctrine is very different than the capable of repetition doctrine. As this court is aware, in the Milwaukee police case, in the Burbank case, the government has the burden to show that it's when in response to litigation, it provides a remedy, it has to show that there's no reasonable expectation that these violations will reoccur. The capable of repetition yet evading review has more to do with a time duration, such as the Majors case or the Krislov case, the elections cases, where remedies are no longer available. For example, in the FOIA context, there's a 20-day response period of time. That's a very short window of I think, even shorter than the elections period. It's our position that both doctrines apply, but also that the court below did not consider the standard that the government bears the burden on voluntary cessation. Once we get past the issue of mootness, which we believe can be resolved by voluntary cessation and the capable of repetition doctrine, either one, we get to the secondary issue of the Administrative Procedures Act. And there it's a bit of a complex issue because what we're dealing with is, does the Administrative Procedures Act provide an independent cause of action where there is a citizen suit provision in the statute, such as FOIA? And we believe that Bennett, the U.S. Supreme Court case, conclusively resolves that issue by saying that even where there is a citizen suit, such as the Endangered Species Act, if that citizen suit is narrowly tailored to a specific part of the statute, you can seek redress for the rest of the statute under the Administrative Procedures Act. In other words, it provides a non-duplicative remedy for portions of a statute not covered by the citizen suit. The court below said that the APA does not apply to the deadline requirements, the timing requirements of FOIA. And what that means is that there would be no remedy at law for an agency's failure to meet the statutory congressional mandates for prompt resolution of appeals. And in this case, the agency took full advantage of that by failing to ever even respond to the appeal and by suggesting that medical records of Mr. Walsh's own personal blindness records were non-existent until he filed the suit. I want to emphasize that this is not the type of timeline violation where the agency just needs more time. there is a process for that in the statute where the agency can say, with notice to the party, that they need more time for unusual or extraordinary circumstances. However, in the present record, it's abundantly clear that no unusual or extraordinary circumstances were ever suggested by the agency. The agency never asked for more time. And more specifically, if you look at the undisputed facts, you'll see that Mr. Walsh has made repeated efforts, not just through the normal process, but extensive responses indicating that there were records from his blindness treatment in 1977 that he wanted to obtain. And notwithstanding multiple letters to that effect, the agency said these records didn't exist. Then, when I became involved and the administrative appeal was filed, we again made the statement. The agency, despite, I think, three letters in the record asking for a response, refused to even respond to the appeal. That being the case, Mr. Walsh had no other choice to get his records but to file this action. He files the action, and about 6 months later, which we see on page 52 of the supplemental appendix, you see that the government suddenly appears with the 1977 medical records and then is held to be the prevailing party in this action. And that really turns, the Freedom of Information Act upside down. The citizen suit becomes essentially meaningless. You can never prevail in an action if the government has that level of control over whether it is the prevailing party in this action. I would suggest that this is a good case to apply the voluntary cessation doctrine. I would suggest that without the agency showing some change in its policy that will correct this problem, this problem can reoccur. Mr. Walsh is still potentially at risk when he has further treatment through the Veterans Administration, which he still qualifies for his blindness, to have this happen again and again and again. Every time he wants records, he has to file suit. That's not how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be a 20-working-day process. I think that Mr. Welsh showed that he had the admirable patience with the agency. I think it showed that he gave the agency every chance to correct its actions. Under those kind of circumstances, a declaratory remedy would be extremely useful, practical, and helpful to the parties to prevent this from reoccurring. I've been talking rather fast. Does the court have any questions?
Did you want to reserve some time?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I think I'll reserve my remaining time.
I don't want to cut you off.
Okay, I'll reserve my remaining time.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Stoddard. Ms. Knepel?
May it please the court. My name is Susan Knepel. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney from the Eastern District of Wisconsin. It is undisputed in this case that the plaintiff received all of the records that he was requesting, and he received these records before any motions were filed in the district court case. Some were produced before the lawsuit was filed, and some were produced after the lawsuit was filed. And I need to clarify counsel's representation here that the agency denied the existence of these 1977 medical records. Mr. Walsh made approximately 4 FOIA requests to different entities within the Department of Veterans Affairs. He initially requested records from the central office, and that's where he started with his initial FOIA appeal. That request was interpreted by the central office as seeking records from a benefits, the claims file. They referred it out. The regional office in Milwaukee for the VBA, Veterans Benefits Administration, produced the records. Mr. Walsh then made another FOIA request directly to the Hines VA Medical Center. They searched for records and produced the records that the Hines VA Medical Center had in its custody. Plaintiff also made a request for records to the VBA, Veterans Administration, in Milwaukee again, seeking these 1977 medical records because he didn't get them from the Hines VA Medical Center. The Hines VA Medical Center advised the plaintiff that the records had been sent to the Milwaukee VA Medical Center. Plaintiff, however, never made a request or contacted the hospital for those records. Plaintiff indicates in his reply brief while he was confused about the difference between the VBA and the Veterans Health and the hospital and where to apply, yet plaintiff knew to apply to the Hines Hospital for medical records. He didn't apply to the Hines Regional Office for medical records. So I want to clarify that. The agency did not deny the existence of these records. I also want to indicate that General Counsel did not refuse to respond to the appeal from the various initial requests. The General Counsel's office in Washington responded that it was gathering the information, and when it received the information from the local offices, it would make a request. Your Honor, this case is moot, and the court should affirm the decision of the district court, and the government will rest on its brief if the court has no questions.
Apparently not. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just briefly responding to the factual allegations, I'm surprised to hear my opposing counsel suggest that Mr. Walsh did not seek records from the Veterans Affairs Hines Hospital. That record is clearly in the appendix, supplemental appendix 24, 25, and there's actually quite a few correspondences with the Hines facility. What the record shows, and it's undisputed that you have the record in front of you, is that Mr. Walsh sent multiple letters to the Hines Hospital. He actually did everything he was told to do by the agency. The agency told him to do something, and he did it. The only confusion is that apparently there were two regional offices, and we indicate that in our reply brief, but the agency never explained that there were two VA regional offices, one handling benefits and one handling other matters. So Mr. Walsh corresponded with the regional VA office. It actually says VA regional office on the letterhead. It doesn't say anything other than that, and he wrote to the party that he was told to write to, was never given any other address or understood that there were two regional offices. But clearly, Mr. Walsh followed his instructions, and there is no reason the agency did not sort out where these records were located. As we point out in our brief, it's the agency's duty to forward a record request to the responsible parties. That's well settled under FOIA, and the agency didn't do that. They made Mr. Walsh struggle. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Otter. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.